How you doing? We're about to talk to the great Ray Sonne, one of the greatest Keith and the Girl guests of all time. But first, I want to tell you, do you have Keith and the Girl VIP? Do you have the brand new My Name is Keith with Casey James Salengo? It's fantastic. We talk about everything. How he finally has sheets on his bed, how he's a human being. And that brings me right to this. Brooklinen. I'm talking sheets. You spend a third of your life on your sheets. Why are they taking care of you the way they should be? Brooklinen.com. Get high quality sheets and bedding you deserve at a price that won't keep you up at night. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world because people love their products. Their sheets have over 12,000 five-star reviews. I love my Brooklinen sheets. Try these sheets, and I know you'll love them too. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code KATG at Brooklinen.com. In fact, Brooklinen is so confident that you'll love your new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. There's no reason not to give these sheets a try. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code KTG at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code KTG. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
My, oh my, what a day we have today.
The best day.
Writer of The President's Show and co-host of the podcast, Miss Andrew with Marsha and Ray. It's not Marsha. We've heard enough of that. Ray Sonne.
Hi.
How you doing, Ray?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Ray writes for The President's Show, which is on Comedy Central, which is excellent. And people are loving it, not just the viewers, but the critics. And of course, it's all important. Do you find it, because you study what's happening in the world, period, and it does affect you. I can obviously see this on Facebook.
And how could it not?
Is your job following Trump, that's what it's about, a satire, but it's a satire because you have to know the real things going on. Is it emotionally exhausting? Do you want to kill yourself after so much research?
I don't want to kill myself because I like the money.
Okay.
But I have instituted a rule for myself where it's like Friday from 6 p.m. to Monday morning. I don't read political news.
Okay.
Is that a regular? Because I know that you're usually up on it. It's usually in your wheelhouse of things to know. Did you have to go, wow, I thought it was too much already. This is too much.
I think like it really, really hit me. Like I was like, everything is going well. I'm on antidepressants. Like, why am I bummed? Right. And then I realized, I was like, oh, you're mainlining this like horrible news all the time. And then last week when Philando Castile's killer got off,
right,
I was just like, oh, I can't look at the internet anymore and I can't read politics or anything like that. And the connection I made with Philando Castile and the Trump administration was Jeff Sessions, because they have these consent decrees that certain police departments, Seattle being one of them, Baltimore being another, where the police department recognizes that they had either an unlawful killing or at least a questionable one. And consent decrees are kind of like these agreements with the public to reform the police department. And Jeff Sessions.
It's so funny that like that you led all of that led to, and they promised with signatures to make it better when that happened. When they questionably kill someone, they have this document that, you know, everyone signed it.
I mean, but that's, you know, as good as it gets, right? Sure. And then Jeff Sessions, like, I don't know, maybe like 2 months ago, basically gave an order to his Justice Department to undermine those. So you barely get any sort of move to reform anything on the part of a police department, even when they settle with victims of shootings or families of the victim. They never accept culpability. It'll just be like a settlement and a confidentiality agreement or something like that. So here you have active police departments saying, look, we are going to reform. We're going to change.
And why not? You're talking about specifically when we think there was an unlawful something.
Yeah, like Freddie Gray sparked the investigation in Baltimore. They found out how poorly they were handling sexual assaults and, you know, how shitty they were treating their black constituency.
I mean, legitimately the opposite of what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
We're not talking about like, and we could be, sexual harassment in the workplace where it's like, you have a different job to do on top of the unlawful shit that's happening. Here, it's the Department of Lawful Shit.
Not doing lawful shit, or at least undermining their ability to effectively police their neighborhoods. And to get a police department to do an investigation of their officers and actually admit to some degree, however indirectly, any wrongdoing is a huge thing. And then for Jeff Sessions to get into the Department of Justice and be like, fuck all those consent degrees. No, we don't pursue them. They're not valid.
We don't pursue consent. What are we doing here?
And then to have him say, well, we want to give police more power. So it just kind of all came together that day for me. Like, it was just like, okay, this is the most obvious case besides the South Carolina shooting where he got shot in the back. But this one, this guy, you couldn't even say he did anything wrong, because they'll come up with a reason for why.
Yes, because their job is scary, period, end of story, right? They can always use that. You can always pull from that. Similarly, and it's not similar, but similarly, then a parent is like, my job is always hard. There's not really like, you know, I will fuck up, things like that. And it's like, but that is your job. We are talking about
you shouldn't be a cop if you're so easily scared. I genuinely think that. If you tell somebody to get their license and they're getting their license and you shoot them because you think the gun's where their license, when he just told you he had a gun, like, whatever. But it was
that seems like day one stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
They always look like, you know, you can't, you'll be so scared, it'll look like something else.
But it's also like a jury's never going to be able to say, this is a reasonable standard of fear, and here's an unreasonable standard of fear. And if somebody approaches the line or like is just below it, like, who decides that? I can always say I'm scared of the big black dude, and there's always going to be somebody who agrees. So it was just frustrating. And then with the conflation of those things, and I think, I don't know, I hadn't gotten laid in a while. I just was like, I need a break. So I just made it now. It's my second week in a row where it's just like, no internet. I just been watching Netflix documentaries.
It's not even that the cops are seeing the person's driver's license and then being scared, because some of these pictures are horrific, you know. it's even before that, and that's the disgusting part.
As a person
part.
Who is not photogenic, I'm aware that my ID might get me shot.
You're like, no, I insist I retake that one. I don't care what the rule is. When you have Donald Trump firing the head of the FBI and threatening to fire anybody investigating him, is that a kick in the pants for all the other presidents that are like, I didn't know we can do that? Nixon, Clinton. I mean, I could have fired him.
Yeah. You know,
it all goes away when you fire him.
Right? Well, the thing is, like, what's so interesting is I wasn't a grown up really during any.
Ever.
I'm still five. But so Obama was such a believer in like government and like institutions, and he had like such faith in like bureaucracy and what government could do for people. And so he was very kind of conciliatory in ways that, you know, might have been a disadvantage sometimes. And to watch like Trump not give a shit, like Obama's like, okay, I believe in government, I'm gonna collaborate with the Republicans, I'm gonna, you know, even with this whole Russia shit where he's like, I'm not going to tell everyone that Russia's trying to hack our elections because I want people to have faith in democracy. And like, Trump is such a stark contrast. It's like mind blowing. He's like, yeah, it says I technically can do this. Right. So I'm going to do it.
You think he really looked somewhere where it says I can technically do it? Or was he like, you're fired, I think I could do that. So
I think he's like, He's such a fucking scammer that I think he's one of these people who's like cognizant of like the little, like the last edge, like the border, like he'll go right up to the edge and not over the cliff. Well, he has gone over the cliff, but he's the kind of person who will make sure he's got one line, at least in this whole paragraph, there's going to be one line that exonerates him. So
his signature has an asterisk.
That I believe.
I remember getting in trouble with my dad, and my mom tried to work this out between us kids and my dad and wrote like a document, like, we're so sorry, we'll try to respect you more. And my mom made us sign it. Mm-hmm. And she didn't like my signature, as if this would end up in court. She's like, yeah, you don't sign your name that way.
But technically, did you go, you know what? I'm not signing it with my real signature because this is bullshit.
Yeah,
it was a little different.
Okay.
You know what? Like similarly, but the opposite. I made my mom sign something when I was about 18. I had a first boyfriend, and of course, it was like nothing that my mom wanted. He was outside of my cultural background, outside of my religious background, and I'm like, and so I'm like, oh, they're gonna start hating me. My parents, I can't deal with this. And instead, and I didn't tell them I had this boyfriend because I knew it was a bad idea. What I did say was, you know, I'm afraid that like I would do something and then you would stop loving me. And my mom's like, what is this? And I'm like, yeah, I just feel like, you know, at some point you're gonna, you know, find something and not like me or some kind of thing like that. And she goes, what do you need me to sign something? And I was like, could you? And I'm like 18 at this point, something like at least 18, 17, 18. And
that's intense.
I really wrote it.
Did she sign it?
She signed it, but you know what?
It doesn't hold.
She doesn't talk to you.
I got to take her to court. She hasn't spoken to me in 2 years.
I'll tell you why it doesn't hold up. Because you didn't say in this lifetime, in the next, on another planet, when my husband is in a different body than you think you're seeing. You know, you got to add all these.
All these
different things.
For a while, I kept it in my wallet. Just like, you know what? Don't act up. I'm going to bring this out. You know what I mean? I got nervous because also I was still like under my parents, you know.
Gotcha.
I was still under my parents.
There's a lot to lose.
Yeah. And so I was still doing things with them if they asked. Mm-hmm. So if they asked like, come to our friend's wedding, it's very normal to bring like, the whole family. And why? So I would go with them. Now, in the back of my mind, I knew they were trying to get me around more Jews so that I could accidentally meet someone that was anybody that had a yarmulke on. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to these weddings and everyone was so excited as the people walked down the aisle and those weddings.
You had
were really
a hard
fun.
Time meeting Jews in New York.
See that now makes me sound like an asshole. Like I just kept my hand out when I met a Jew. I know like, all about them. It's gross.
It's just so interesting that your parents have to like put you in front of Jewish people in New York City.
We need to make sure. By the way,
what would happen is these people would go down the aisle and everyone's thrilled and some people would be crying and I would like secretly start crying, which wouldn't make any sense because I don't really know this person. So I would try to secretly cry. So nobody goes like, wow, you're really touched by this because I don't even want to give the credit to being touched. What I was crying about is like, if this was my wedding right now with the person that I happen to be in love with, no one would be clapping, everyone would be upset and it would still be this for me. You know what I mean? I would still want that. I would still get married and do all this, except no one would be here.
That's crazy.
Like none of, so it was just like, of course I'm going to make you sign this. This is horrendous.
It was my mom's birthday yesterday and I forgot to call her. Yeah.
Bad move.
Also, my dad sent an email yesterday saying, you did remember that it's mom's birthday today, didn't you? At 2:30 p.m. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to call my mom here at work. I'll wait until I get home. And then I got home and I'm walking the dogs, feeding him, and I'm tired. I go right to bed. I don't remember until this morning. And so I wake up. I'm like, oh, it's my mom's birthday. And I call her and I say, oh, sorry. You know, I knew about it, but I got home. Next thing you know, it slipped my mind. I apologize.
I don't know that that's a better...
I should have said I got robbed, right?
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Yeah, you were, like, totally incapacitated. Because I don't... Yeah. It slipped my mind when I was walking my dogs. I gave birth to you, you fuck.
You know, it's confusing to me because it's like her anniversary is her birthday backwards. And her I get confused with the June and July family dates.
You got a reminder.
Yeah, but I was at work.
So step outside for 5 minutes. Hey, mom, just wanted to give you a quick birthday call. I'm going to call you back when I have more time.
But then I would never call her back. Isn't that worse?
No. No. It's better than a call the day after telling me that you forgot because you was walking puppies.
I go, you know how kids can be a handful.
Was she mad or anything?
Your puppies call you a day late. Right. Let's see how you feel.
I knew, she said she was fine. She's like, I can understand. But something in her voice wasn't. But it was odd to me because even if it did bother, she would never admit it or let on.
It totally bothered her. Moms aren't going to tell you that. You forgetting a call on their birthday really made them upset. That's not what moms do.
But it's the first time that I can recognize the tone that she's upset.
Yeah, so what are you going to do?
I have to run away. I may never talk to her again. I don't know how to deal.
Yeah.
So she tells me about her day. She goes, well, yesterday I went to Sheetz, which is our 7-Eleven, and you get hot dogs for free on your birthday. So I got two hot dogs.
That's really adorable.
But they weren't giving them for free. And that's weird because the website says you get them for free. So I'm going to have to talk to the manager. And then we went to Arby's.
So she had to pay for her hot dog. Yeah. And then you forgot to call her.
At least my son will call me. That's worth four hot dogs.
Oh, geez.
So she tells me about the day, and then she says, actually, the timing of you calling me, I did this, then ate, and then I put on your shows, and I heard three of your shows.
No, that's not what she said. Yeah. No, three shows. That's a lot of shows.
That's 3 hours.
No, that's what she did on her birthday?
And right away, I'm like, well, there's the attitude I'm hearing.
Oh, she not only did you not call her on her birthday, she is now fully aware of how terrible a person you are.
No, right. But let me tell you, no, I know what's coming. It's that I'm a shithead. I don't know why I'm making this about me, but first of all, because Keith likes blaming me now that we're not dating. They're like, you know that Jew that I work with. You know how they get. And I'm fine with it. Like, of course I'm fine with it. Like, throw anybody under the bus. It's your parents, whatever. But, oh, and now that I'm speaking, I'm like, hi, Mrs. Malling.
Keith, you're naturally funny. So I'm just going to ask two things of you.
Oh, boy.
One, don't use the Lord's name in vain.
Well,
what did you say? God damn it?
I said he doesn't exist.
Well, that's not using his name in vain if you don't know, if you don't believe in him.
Well, one time I did joke. I deliberately go out of my way to believe in him so I can hate him.
Yeah, my mom would probably have a problem with me saying that too.
So that, and then, but that was the end of it. So I guess I just said, you know, G-damn or that kind of thing.
G-damn.
I'm trying to change, mom. What's a birthday wish, you know? And then so I don't think it was a big thing that I said because right away with the same gravitas she said, and stop cursing. I'm hearing F this and F that.
That's it.
And to me, that's just, that part is silly. And so I'm like, oh, okay. What am I going to do? Say, no, Ma, it's your birthday. No. I got to be me. Shit. You know.
Well, it's not her birthday because you were late. So you can push back on the day after her birthday.
In fact, that's why you should call the day after.
Right. You're like,
what is this, your birthday? Shut the fuck up.
You missed your chance, bitch.
I said, Mom, isn't it weird that...
Calls go two ways.
Mom, isn't it weird that it's the religious people that don't believe in global warming? You believe in a lake of fire. Anyway, I'll talk to you later, you wackos. Anyway, that was the call. And I'm like, I'll take that under advisement.
But she thinks you're funny.
I'm naturally funny. That's nice.
There it is. And did you want to ask which episodes? You got to be curious about what they know about you because they know nothing except these three episodes.
I think it's the one where I cursed. I think that was the one.
Oh, man.
That's not nerve-wracking to you that you don't know which one?
No. She must not know my dogs almost died. You know, what else?
Oh, yeah. She didn't bring up any of it.
Well, the cursing threw her.
Fucking A, my puppy almost died. Fuck! And all she heard was, fuck!
Right. Beep. Fuck.
That's actually a good way to sort of keep your parents around the context that we talk about. We just start every sentence with fuck. Mm-hmm. Right. Fuck. So I was fucking my wife. You know, just like turn this off.
See, Mom? She's the bad one.
I am the bad one.
Yeah, it's just a shame. Because what am I going to say, you know? Now, Mom, it's... I think it shows passion and it's natural.
What's so funny, like they must be so curious about why you genuinely feel the need to continue for years cursing.
Right.
Especially like because I imagine somewhere in them they were like, oh, he'll grow out of it, you know?
They find the story funny when I say my dad would curse and then if I'm around, pretend he's covering up. He would stub his toe and go, ah, shit. Ski bibble, shit ski bibble. And I'd go, what? And go, it's just a makeup word. I say makeup words, what? Mm-hmm. And so they would find that funny.
It's the I'm not touching you of words. It's right. Crazy.
My parents don't mind me like cursing a lot. They just don't like it if it's just like super cavalier because they just think it's rude. So it's not like, it's just impolite is why. My mom would never be like, don't curse on stage. But she, like, if I'm talking to my mom and my sister, I can't be like, fuck, shit, cut.
I think that's reasonable. I think that anybody who talks to you, you get to put the rules.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I said I don't want cursing, then I would have people in my life that don't curse while they're around me. I don't think that's such a big deal. Like, you go into somebody else's house. I smoke in my house, but I don't assume I could smoke in everybody's house.
And also, I think there's an element of, you know, when you're talking, like I think my mom will never be my friend. Mm. Like my mom and I will be friendly. Like we'll have a friendly relationship as mother and daughter, but she's, you know, an old school Nigerian woman. Like your kids are your kids. And so I think that if it gets to the point where I'm cussing freely, that assumes this kind of freedom in the relationship without addressing sort of the authority and the like parent-child dynamic. Like there's no sort of formality or like rigidness around who's in charge.
Do you like the formality? Because I look at other people and I know I'll never be friends with my mom, even if we do start talking again. She, the same as yours, you know, they're Middle Eastern. I feel like there's a lot of similarities. There is a formality. She wants to be my mother. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to be friends. They'll say things like that too. Mm-hmm. If I ever get confused, which I never would. But then I see Hennessy's relationship with his parents where they know him.
They
know him.
I don't want to be like that with my parents. Like I'm good with the mother daughter situation. Like I'm learning. I'm understanding my mom more as a person in the sense that I know what she gave up to be my mom, and I can appreciate that. But I don't want to take on the burden of my mom as now a friend the way that you would have to take out. Like if you choose to have like a very close friendship with a person, you take their idiosyncrasies and their weirdness and, you know, you hear their history and everything like that. I don't want to know my mom that way.
Really?
No. I'm good with having a vague understanding of what has shaped her parenting style and, you know, who she is as an adult. But I don't want to wear my mom the way that I would wear a friendship.
But in kind of scenario, you know, we're talking about a different mom that you actually like. That could be the difference.
No, I love my mom.
My dad is
my mom's super dope. My dad sucks.
my dad is one of these that would be clear. You know, I'm your parent, not your friend. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, but you don't have to tell me first thing in the morning. Just a reminder, we're not friends. I'm like, Dad, I'm 43. Okay, I get it. You're not driving me to school, so what are we?
Yeah. That's funny. My mom, you know, like we chill, you know,
right.
But like, it's not going to be like, oh girl, let me tell you what happened. Like,
I also think that is the comfort zone that she put out there. So I feel like part of it is you responding to her comfort as well.
Right. And you know, she's not trying to be my best friend either.
Yeah.
And
I think my mother would hate that. Like when she says she wants to be my friend, she wants to be my mother friend.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And also just kind of like, there's this thing that no one ever admits that, more often than not, if you weren't related to the people that you're related to, you probably wouldn't be friends with them. And so there's also that weird thing where you got to figure out, now that your mama's your friend, do you fuck with your friend like that? And it's like, I don't want to get to the point where I'm like, I don't really like who my mom is as a person. I don't think it would happen, but the risk is too much for me.
Right. Ray Sani, you can follow her on Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing. And she writes, when men find out I'm a comedian, they always try to outfunny me. It's so bizarre. It's not like they'd go up to an NBA player and try to outplay him. Actually, they might. If there's anything men have, it's an abundance of unearned confidence. you find this right away, right? You'd be hanging out with a guy, they find out you're a comedian.
Absolutely.
And they're not, but they're like, well, I got to tell you my jokes now.
Yeah.
How can you tell? Like, something switches in their language?
Yeah, absolutely. Or they're trying to land the joke.
Mm. And it's like they're saying it in a cadence?
Yeah, and it's like, all right, just talk to me normally, you know? I'm on the dating apps, and the minute they're like, what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh God, here we go.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, I write for a TV show on Goomba Central. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, my favorite stand-ups are, and I've been trying this, and maybe I should, and it's like, fuck you, dude. Like, it's so annoying because it's not, you know, like, I don't think women do this, where we're like comfortable to let somebody be like an extroverted artist and just be impressed by them. But like, for some reason, men don't know how to sit in being impressed by you. They have to now then demonstrate why they're more impressive.
Hmm. Right. Ray wrote, the Uber driver I feel relatively safe around says, so you live around here. And then me, no longer feeling safe. Nah, it's my boyfriend's house, who has 10 pit bulls. You know, I was talking to a woman the other day, and she says, oh, man, I end up talking to these Uber drivers all the time, and I don't want to talk.
I don't either. I never want to talk, but they always want to talk.
And I would blame her. I'm like, I don't have a problem. Somehow I just get in the car and I shut the fuck up. But I now, of course, I can see the difference. For example, police officers never ask me, how am I doing?
Exactly.
Right? But they ask Kendall all the time, how you doing?
And it's like,
right. How come I'm not being asked anything?
But also, it's just, this dude's driving me to my house.
Right.
And like,
so you alone for the night? I'm just want to make sure you get inside.
Like, why are you asking me that, bruh? I'm locked in the back of your car. You have locked the doors.
Right.
And you are easy 50 pounds on me. And you asking me where I live. Like, I gotta navigate this one.
There was a driver one time that locked the door on us because he wasn't pleased. Like, we got to the house and then he wasn't pleased with that. I don't remember the conversation, but he wasn't pleased with it because something happened where he took the wrong way and now he's taking longer. And I'm like, I'm not paying for your fuck up. We talked about this. And he locks the door and I'm like, you better fucking unlock this fucking door now because there's nothing I can do.
There's nothing you can
do. So I just started acting crazy because crazy wins.
Right.
And,
okay.
And again, he's dropping me.
But also, you don't pay him in cash. So he could easily dispute with Uber. Like, the fact that he tried to make you feel unsafe is ridiculous because it's not like you had the option of giving him cash at the moment. It was going to come from the car.
This was before Uber, but I don't know. But yeah, okay. But at the same time, now we're all linked. So you know my name, mm-hmm. and it's not that hard to Google me, mm-hmm. and it's too intimate. That's why, like, it's one bad thing about having a name like this is either people don't remember it at all, and it's just like some, I don't know, some ethnic name, or like you write down your name and like you can find everything.
Right.
Well, the good thing about these creepy Uber guys is now you can tip them.
Can you?
Yeah, it's coming.
They're adding that to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I just took an Uber here and I didn't see the tip option.
No, I don't think it's there yet, but get excited. Dear Keith and Chemda, have you ever regretted starting a podcast? Fabian says,
are you trying to say something?
I am thinking of changing careers, but I'm worried about going from a stable job to starting all over in my 30s. Can you tell me if taking a risk like that is worth it? Or should I feel satisfied and lucky to have a job that affords me everything I need and some fun things that I want? Fan since 2007.
No, of course don't change your job. If you have everything you need and want, yeah. What are you questioning? I imagine this question is falling from the sky and you happen to hit send on it because it fell into your computer.
Yeah, let me
you sound very satisfied.
Kind of course, picked up on this. I didn't start the podcast until I was 30. I, however, also did not have everything I needed. With extra money to do fun things that I want.
Yeah, we didn't have any of that.
Right.
Yeah,
But Chemda's point is, exactly, you're obviously missing out, right? This is what you want to do. Or do you just want to, I want to do something that's a little less work? Is that what it sounds like? Because it's probably only more work, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But to me, this too late thing is ridiculous. ridiculous. In your 30s, you just started. Your 20s could have been everything that you didn't want to do. And your 30s could be like, oh, the 20s was still school. Also, whenever somebody wants to change their life or go for it or whatever, they feel like they need to go for it. Everything has to change. Nothing has to change.
Right.
Add something. You can afford everything in your life plus some fun things. Guess what? Your fun thing is now your potential career. Try some things on with all the money that you have. How great would that be? You have a career that you feel super safe with, excuse me. And like one time a night, maybe you want to be a writer because we're looking for something that's very, he didn't say what, right? So maybe something unstable, a writer. Write every day, write every Monday night, go to a class on Tuesdays. Like, you have this, don't do a 180 or don't like, you know, turn 90 degrees. Don't do any of the number things.
But also anything that isn't salaried is the kind of thing that you have to do on the side, because if you're not making money instantly, you've got to find another job to sustain your lifestyle unless you have a rich daddy.
My job is making two girls, one cup videos on the artist side. Oh, no. Well, I mean, if it pays, it pays.
That video, like,
Yeah, why, right? That's what we wanted for something to blow up.
Our very first Keith and the Girl TV, by the way, is when the reaction shots from that was a big deal, and it's him, this reaction.
I wasn't going to watch it at all, but then we started Keith and the Girl TV, and I was like, I guess we got to do this. Oh, my God.
I don't think I made it, like, past 20 seconds.
Why would you?
Right.
I think you got the gist. I mean, no spoilers, but I'll fill you in later.
People go, Keith, you saw the latest The Mummy? I'm like, you watched Two Girls, One Cup. Come on now. By the way, speaking of jobs, the president show.
Yeah.
Do you get health care?
Funny. I've joined the Writers Guild and will thus have health care very soon.
Good. Has life changed since this job?
Yeah, a ton.
Yeah.
They look into my bank account, the government. They look into where I go every day.
Well, speaking of bank accounts, actually, so there was like a huge jump in terms of like my money that I was making, because I was working admin at a nonprofit before, and then it's not nonprofit money anymore. And so like I would buy things and Chase would turn off my card all the time because they thought it was fraud. And I'm like, no, I'm the bitch who bought that.
You're taking pictures. See,
it's me. So one time it was a really big embarrassment for me because we work in Hell's Kitchen and I'm the only black person in this like really nice pizza restaurant, this like mm-hmm. pizzeria. And
are you usually aware of that?
Yeah, I'm always aware. If I'm the only black person, I'm a lot less aware of it now, but I'm definitely more often than not on notice.
Why less aware now?
I don't know. Maybe because where I work, I'm like usually the only black woman someplace. So like we work in Hell's Kitchen. For the most part, I'm going to be the only black woman in any restaurant around there. I'm the only black woman on the writer staff. We have a diverse writing staff. It's just I'm the only black woman.
Do you have is it diverse meaning you have one of each kind of, you know, each quotes?
There are more women than you would expect. There's more people of color than you would expect. There's only like total, maybe like 7 writers.
So you're saying your guy's cabinet is a little different than Trump's cabinet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our cabinet is a little different. So I'm the only black woman in this restaurant, and I just rang up like a $70 bill, right?
Good pizza.
It's delicious pizza, but also I just kept getting like these $15 glasses of rosé because I think I'm fancy. And then she's like, oh, your card's not working.
Fuck.
It's the most embarrassing thing in the world. I'm screaming on the phone with Chase. Fuck. And they're like, oh, you have to go to a branch. And it's like 8 p.m. Where the fuck is an open branch? Now I'm at this restaurant and I can't pay my bill.
And I don't know how to put this phone on speaker so you can tell the whole restaurant I'm on the up and up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not some poor bitch trying to scam, you know?
Wait a minute, but you have the money in there.
Exactly.
Yeah, they should just turn it back on.
He said they couldn't. They actually had to issue me a whole new debit card because once they turn off your debit card, they can't turn it back on remotely.
Wow.
So fortunately for me, I had like $40 in cash.
Fuck.
And I gave that to the bartender and I was like, look, I'm so embarrassed. I'm really sorry. I work around the corner. I'll come back and I'll I'll give you cash the next day. So the next day,
well, how did the bartender respond to that?
She was really cool about it because she saw my frustration of me like yelling on the phone, and she was brown, so I'm sure she understood how embarrassed I was and stuff. And so I came back the next day and I like left a huge tip because she was so cool about it. And
then that didn't go through.
But then I ordered a bunch of clothes online maybe like a week later and it wouldn't go through. And then I had to call them and I literally yelled into the phone, "It's never fraud. It's always me. And if you worry about fraud, that's fine. If someone steals my card and spends my money, I'll be okay with it. As long as you stop doing this."
And they're like,
and I've never had a problem since. So
I just picked them on the other line because I've been that frustrated. And I'm like, I'm trying not to yell at a nice person who's like at work.
Yeah.
But then to that, like, and then I went there and then I hate their response because it's more infuriating. And you already know that you got too mad. You got too mad. It's a phone call. You can't. And so they go, "I understand your frustration and I apologize." And then they go into like a four sentence apology that they're supposed to do. And I'm like, oh my God, please just turn on my goddamn car.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, so what
I off this call.
What I found is because the most frustrated I've ever gotten with customer service is UPS. They're useless. And
they're the worst.
What I do is,
well, their name is Oops.
That's true. That's true. I didn't realize. What I'll do is like, I'm so fucking angry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's not your fault. I know it's not your fault, but you have to understand that you are the fourth person I've talked to. I sincerely apologize. I'm just so fucking frustrated. I'm sorry. I know you're just doing your job and that there's a, like, so it's always like, it's like a brief moment where I lose it and I swear. And then I like, right. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please don't be angry with me. You just have to understand.
Do you say, look, I'm black, you're brown. Look, let's talk.
Well, you know what I find is, I don't know if they can tell. I don't know if people can tell if I'm black based on my voice. But I do find that the black women customer service people are much nicer to me. Huh. They're more willing to be helpful.
So you can tell that they're black.
Oh, I can always spot a black bitch. You know me.
So maybe they're spotting you.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But sometimes I think maybe my angry self, because sometimes like a Brooklyn accent will come out. And like, I'm like, all right. Okay, but if I'm not that angry, I don't know necessarily that if you heard my voice, it's an instant black girl thing.
I only hear your accent at the end of a sentence sometimes, and I'm just like, Brooklyn.
Yeah, it comes out in like weird moments. It's very strange.
Well, I like it.
When you hear a black girl pick up on the other end, do you say something like, "Ooh, holla, holla"?
Well, not quite holla, holla. Okay. Maybe like, "Hey, girl."
Okay, that's close. Oh my God. This is, you know, these scams. This is somebody pretending they're the IRS calling for $8,000 or they're going to shut down their whole life.
Mm-hmm. So, according to Section 101, the amount is still outstanding on any which you have not paid or that you have miscalculated. For that reason, the local authorities with arrest warrant will be at your place. Your driving license will be canceled and everything under
an arrest warrant, a driver's license will be canceled.
Yeah, I've gotten emails
property,
like that too.
Your bank account will be seized.
Bank card seized.
Now, the total outstanding amount on your name is $8,219, which includes your pending taxes, legal charges, and late fees.
So now there's a guy who started something called Project Mayhem. Mm-hmm. He has a Patreon even. "I'm a security developer who tries to prevent victims from being scammed by different types of scams. These can be text scams, phone scams, and more."
Now watch, his is the biggest scam.
I know, I was about to be like a Patreon already.
Now, this guy seems on the up and up.
"It has been detected that you are a scammer. Because of this, we are now flooding your phone lines to prevent you from scamming additional people.
Wow.
This will not stop until you stop.
Have any service can I help you?
Hello, it has been detected that you are a scammer. Hello, it has been detected that you are a scammer. Because of this, we are now flooding your phone lines to
please leave a message after the beep.
Hello, it has been detected that you are a scammer.
Also, that's a quick, that's an easy giveaway too. Like if
they say, "Hello, I'm John from the IRS."
And with the heaviest accent ever, but also if you can hear other callers in the background, it's like, if you're about to inform me that I need legal counsel because a warrant is out for my arrest, I imagine you're not going to be in a call center. Yeah.
I've gotten, I don't know, somebody gave my phone number to somewhere because the only calls I'm getting is, okay, have you guys gotten this one? You just pick up and goes, hey, it's Marie. How are you? I'm like, motherfucker, I know who Marie is because that's the tone. And I'm like, oh, I'm good. How are you? Because now I'm playing with it. You know, sometimes like, fine, thanks. I just called to ask you about this cruise that we're having done. And I'm like, because I know, because they're getting so good at like their pre, you know, their pre stuff. So I'm like, I know you're a scammer. And they're like, and they just hang up. So they can actually hear, or I go like, are you real? And sometimes they go, what do you mean? And I'm like, come on.
I had one calling me, pretending to be from the IRS. I can tell, obviously, whether it's the background or what. And so I just hung up and I'm like, wait a minute. And so I call back and right away they go, Keith? And I'm not talking. I'm like, let me hear what they're going to say. And they go, Keith. And I'm like, okay, that's what the terrifying. IRS does. I call back and you go, Keith.
Yeah.
I'm the IRS. Keith,
that's
hello.
That's terrifying.
But get the fuck out of
that's
town.
That's crazy.
But, you know, also, well, what I found cool is, I don't know, the latest iOS update, well, if you get a call from like a number like this, it'll say scam likely.
Whoa.
Instead of the instead of showing the number.
Wow, wouldn't it be great if it was your mom? I knew it. I got a letter not that long ago because I racked up some credit card debt. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, this happens so many times and it's exactly what they say will happen. I use it because like the app right now, because I have, you know, the same bank as my credit card, you could just go, I just used it, I passed it over. And of course you neglect it and then you go over and whatever. So I have this credit card debt. And so once you have credit card debt, these scams start coming at you. And I got a letter saying, hey, you have like this amount of credit card debt. And it was like a warning. Your things are blah, blah, blah. They're about to happen. So I'm like, I think this is a scam, but it's so scary that I'm going to call because I could neglect something. And I right away was like, who are you? And they're like, we're going to help you with your debt. I'm like, who are you?
Right.
And then, and they took a while and they have all these ways around the words of who they are because they're just a scamming company. I'm like, are you the credit card company? Because they're saying they could work with you and shit like that. And they finally had to admit it. And I said, you scammer or something like not that word. And she's like, that's rude. And I'm like,
you don't think calling my phone and trying to steal money from me is rude?
Yeah. She was so upset with me. And I was like, but you're sitting there and it's fine that you have a job and it's fine that you're doing that, but you should be fine with me going, okay.
Well, I don't know if this is true. I'm just functioning like it's true, but
I like that. That's my kind of goal. I'm functioning like this is true anyway.
But when I was younger and very dumb, I took some payday loans out.
Oh, those are scams.
Those are huge scams.
Those are like 100% interest or something crazy like that.
Yeah, something like 200% or whatever.
Yeah, things that like, that's actually legitimately unlawful.
Yeah, so in New York State, it's illegal to get a payday loan. But it wasn't illegal when I got them. But now, you know, it's illegal. Oh. So I've just not paid them back. And I think that they're like trying to collect, but they can't force me to collect. So every so often I'll get an email from like some Native American bank in Utah from like a reservation being like, we're gonna kidnap you. And I'm like, you can't because I'm in Brooklyn.
So this is the lesson. You see something too good to be true, take advantage because soon the government will make it not too good to be true.
But I think you can't. I think that they can't collect. I might be wrong. And now all these payday loans are going to come get me. But yeah, like.
I would operate like that's true.
Yeah, I think so.
Until I get arrested.
Yeah, all that, it's so expensive to be poor, like all that predatory lending. And like, even if you don't have the credit for a bank account, and you can't get a bank account. They have all these like debit cards, like your Rush card and shit like that. It costs money to swipe. It costs money to withdraw. It costs money
to open the envelope up.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's so fucked how bad, like. Yeah. Being poor, they take all the advantage of you. It's like really wild.
Dear Keith and Chemda, big fan of the show. You guys helped raise me. I've been listening since I was 16. I'm 26 now. So good. That other
person. She's a terrible person now.
That other person only listened for 7 years. I just learned what code switching is on your show.
Oh, God. Who taught people code switching on your show?
This guy, me.
Oh, wow.
I often learn new terms on your show that you seem like you've been comfortable with for a while. Why am I behind on these things, and how can I change that? Where do you learn that from?
Follow Black Women on Twitter.
Thank you, Dennis. Well, I brought it up, I believe it was with Alzo Slade.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
I was listening to The Breakfast Club.
Okay.
A black show. And I would hear Chris Rock on it, or let's say Kevin Hart. And I bring these people up because I've heard them obviously on otherwise white shows. And they're talking in a way that I have never heard them talk before.
Yeah.
And I think I used the example, I would hear them say, this joint has a lot of bangers. And I'd be like, I'm not confused. I know you're saying the new album out has a lot of potential hits. But you're talking in a whole different way I didn't hear before. And that's when
because you gotta look into what they like at home.
Right. But did they, I guess they feel they have to do it.
Well, no, I don't think black people have to code switch so often that it might not even be a conscious decision. Like, I'm not going to talk to you the way that I would talk to my sister or my friend or something like that.
Right.
Because we just don't have that commonality to relate. So I could see Chris Rock just walking into the Breakfast Club and being like, oh, fam, it's really good to see you. Because that's how he would probably talk when he saw them without cameras on. And then he would go to the cellar and have to speak to Louis C.K. differently, not on purpose, just they relate differently because that's what it is.
Do you find yourself doing that?
I do it all the time.
Yeah?
I do it all the time. Absolutely. I talk to all of my black friends very differently from how I talk to all of my white friends, unless we are so tight that I can truly be myself. And I think there's like two people on the
planet.
But
I don't even mean like, you know, obviously when I'm closer to somebody, I'm more personal, but you find yourself using different vernacular.
Different language, different cadence, everything. They're just
Is it exhausting?
It's annoying to have to do, but I think that it's so secondhand at this point, like second nature, that it doesn't feel like a to-do, but I've also reduced the number of white people in my life, so there's that too.
So I can breathe easier by coincidence. So the person says, why am I behind on these things and how can I change that? You start a podcast, you get different kinds of people in your office every single day and you learn new words. It's that easy. But now don't do it if you have everything you need and everything you want in your life.
But that is so funny. You literally just said, get to know people outside of your race. In whatever way,
right,
you know, that's the way that worked for you. But like, how do you find out anything? How do you find out how do you find out someone else's language or someone else's experience? You gotta talk to someone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And with the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned so much from Twitter. It's really insane.
Really? Like what?
I hate white men.
Oh, no, I knew that in real life.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
Don't you worry. Princeton took care of that. That was the real education I got there. You know, I learned, like, feminism on Twitter, like, black feminism in particular, how it manifests, you know, how people are conversing around it. I learned about, you know, transgender people and identity and understanding what gender identity is. And there's still some things I'm not entirely clear on, but I'm clear on, like, you know, how to be respectful and understanding.
Do you purposefully follow? Do you, like, have you made a conscious effort? Like, I don't know anything about this.
I know. I genuinely just happen to think that some people who are funny were also really, really progressive. And that was, like, a wonderful blessing. I learned so much about what it means to, like, be, like, an I'm not an activist. I wouldn't call myself that, but like active in my blackness, you know, understanding what it means to be like pro-black and pro my black identity. Like, I mean, obviously I might have learned these things, but like Twitter totally accelerated it in a way that like allowed me to like engage with it in a colloquial way. And also not be ashamed because these people were having public conversations. So I was able to engage with it publicly.
Are you worried, like a lot of people on Twitter, you know, you're telling jokes and you're telling jokes that are on very heavy topics. Mm-hmm. And sometimes somebody says something and their career is, quote, done. I don't believe that the career is always done.
Well, if you're a white
done,
dude, but your career is not going to be done. You're absolutely fine. You will always bounce back. There, and even now, particularly in this climate, if a white male in particular, but also sometimes white women, if a white male is like, loses his job in a mainstream space because of a Twitter fuck up or something,
he usually gets millions of dollars on the way out.
On the way out, he's going to get millions of dollars. And also there's going to be this contingent of people who are like, fuck the PC police. And they will actively support you as a like defiant fuck you to liberal people. So no one's ever going to be in trouble. And
are you scared of it?
No, not at all.
You don't second guess your tweets?
No, I second guess tweets all the time, but that's because I'm wondering if I conveyed the idea that I wanted to convey properly. I'm not worried about losing my job for offending because I'm not somebody who's inclined toward the offensive. And it's so bizarre to me that there are so many people who lose their jobs because they said something dumb because you, it's like, well, you're waking up thinking dumb shit. That's why this happened to you. Like, it would never happen to me. Like, well, look, let me not jinx myself.
Well, I'll tell you, I've never seen a Ray tweet or comment and went, whoa.
Yeah. Like, I honestly, like, the one time that I ever said, like, a word like faggot or something and, like, used it wrong, I was 19 in college and my friend instantly yanked me back. So it's like, who are you around? And how often are these words on the tip of your tongue that you could get into, like, house nigga falls out your big fucking idiot Bill Maher mouth? Like, because you're moving through your life that way. I'm not worried about offending people because I'm not the kind of person who is offensive. Now, like, if there's somebody who tries to push back on something, I've likely thought about what I said, so I have no problem defending what I said.
Yeah, then, and you and Marsha both, you know, say things like "kill all men."
Yeah,
and you say, "What is it? You don't talk to white women, so you don't take
pictures with white women."
She doesn't take pictures with white women, but she has a podcast with a white woman. So like
every picture,
their pictures are so funny.
It's like Marsha sneaking a picture with me in the background.
Or they'll be like a picture of Ray. She didn't want to be in the picture. It's really funny. Or she reluctantly took the picture. There was like a caption of like, and or she'll have a face like, I guess I'm in here. Fuck you.
With Marsha is definitely a joke because I adore Marsha. And she's one of the people, like I was saying, one of the few white people I just am myself around all the time. But it's a joke with Marsha, but I genuinely feel this. I try not to be the only black person in a photo because no matter how happy you look, you always look sad. And it's like the reason I came up with this rule was like, you know, do you remember like 2 years ago when Taylor Swift was like collecting all of her feminist celebrity friends?
Mm-hmm,
there was a photo of like a July 4th party and what's her name? Uzo Adubo, I think the girl Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black is like the singular person of color in this sea of annoying white women. And like, as happy as she looked to be there, she looked so pitiful in my opinion, because it looked like, oh yeah, someone plucked her because Taylor's PR people were like, you got to get a brown one, you know? And it just is like, I don't ever want to look like that. She looked so grateful to be there. She wasn't as famous as the other people. And it just looked like such a charity. And I never want to appear that way.
Get the one black person you want in and then hire another one so that everybody's comfortable.
Exactly.
Yes.
When you say that, do you get any pushback or do you get a cosign from other people?
My black friends always are. Like, I actually literally had someone write, my college friend write on my Facebook wall like 2 weeks ago. He was like, you've changed my life. This is a very, very important piece of advice. And it's like, yeah, it's true, because even if you aren't a token, people will receive you as one. And it's very important to me that white people don't mistake me for an ally. I just want to be clear.
Don't call me when you're down, you bitches. You've finally earned a spot.
It's like, not me. I'm not your Benny Carson. I ain't your Omarosa. And I think that there's like, I think because of how I speak and, you know, schools I've attended and things like that, people inaccurately assume certain things about me, and I won't, you know, further that by putting myself in photos.
Are we excited about the Tupac movie? Do we care?
No, I have no interest.
Did you ever care for him?
I'm sure my younger self thought he was really handsome, but he's also a convicted rapist, so I'm fine with not caring.
Is that, well, they better have that in the movie. That's what I'm saying. They're going to keep some things out. I bet you they're going to keep out convicted rapists.
I wonder.
I'm not pleased.
No.
Bye-bye. That movie's done. I saw that.
Jada Pinkett was mad.
Yeah, first I saw Straight Outta Compton, and I'm like, they got to be. You know, this is a funny word to say, whitewashing this, where they have, you know, I didn't really follow them. I found the music a little corny, never mind offensive, but they show Eazy-E robbing one person's house is the worst thing he ever did, and that was a terrible drug dealer. You know, I'm like, I bet you Eazy-E did other stuff.
I mean, when Straight Outta Compton came out, there was this whole thing about how they're lionizing Dr. Dre, but he's a woman beater. Like, he beat up a woman journalist pretty bad. Her name was Dee Barnes because she said something he disagreed with. And she wrote this whole long piece about how she had never gotten her apology, her like public due, like, and so then Dr. Dre, because he had just done that, Beats by Dre deal with Apple.
Right.
And Apple kind of was like, release a statement. And so he releases a statement which like doesn't accept culpability. It's kind of just like, I was young and I did fucked up things. And like,
he said he went through his own thing too.
Yeah, basically. And so it's like, I don't trust a movie to necessarily, if a man is the subject of a movie, it's not going to be about his worst self. And if it's about his worst self, there's always some redeeming thing or he's some kind of anti-hero.
Right.
So I'm trying to think of any movies about a woman. You think they don't do that? Because movies in general, I think they try to leave us on a, you know, the reason why we are doing it about this person is because they overcame or, you know, like pushed through.
I think in general with women, though. So first of all, if they're telling a woman's story, she had to be absolutely pristine because there's no such thing as a female antihero. We always hate them. So I can't think of a female antihero anywhere.
Oh, so yeah. So if she's getting like beat by her husband, she has to be the perfect wife on
right.
top
so
of it.
Right. So Tina Turner's
never had
story,
an affair.
Exactly. Yeah. And then if there's a woman who is flawed, the story is that she's flawed. Like, so Joan Crawford is a terrible mother and now we have a whole biopic about it or something like that. Right. It's never going to be like, here's a woman in all of her like different facets and their approach with like an equally critical or like reasonable lens. It's like, we're writing this movie about this victim or we're writing this movie about this terrible abuser of a woman. It's never someone who encompasses both.
Why is Tupac so loved? Again, maybe
because he died.
That's it. He wasn't some kind
he
of...
He was loved before that.
Yeah, he was, but I mean...
He was more controversial, though.
Yeah, Jada Kiss has a line where he says in We Gonna Make It, he says, you know, dead rappers get better promotion.
Right.
After he threatens to kill somebody. he was explaining why it's good for you to die. No, but it's true. It's like, you know, we always do that where someone's life is cut short, so we amplify the impact of what they said. Tupac is, you know, really talented, but he's not the genius lyrically that everyone assumed him to be. He's not as prophetic as, I don't think he's as prophetic as everyone said he was. He was this conflicted, contradictory person in their 20s, like everybody is when they're in their 20s. Right. He was also a convicted rapist. Can we just, okay.
You know, I don't know how many people know that.
I don't think I did, and I was like, around at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but you know what I think I did with a lot of rape accusations, and I think people still do it now. I just went, it kind of lumped in with, you know, he has a criminal background.
Yeah, yeah.
And rape was just, to me, another way of stealing something that, like, I never really...
Yeah.
And also, back then, I thought, you know, people could just be accusing people because they are this
big
thing.
Myth.
I didn't really go... You know, I think as soon as you you think that, and somebody goes, hey, there's a layer deeper than that, and you think for half a second, you stop thinking that, which is why it's so infuriating.
And when you say, maybe he just had a bad background, keep in mind, he died at 25. Where's yeah, their time for a background?
but that is when...
But also, and he was like raised well. That right. It's like he was raised to be like a good kid, and this whole...
Yeah, but
like
he's
he literally,
a musician. Like a lot of musicians have this negative background, and that's what they draw from. That's why people are attracted
famous,
to them.
He got famous and started hanging. It's very Chris Brown of him, like, to get famous and really start fucking with the gang people. You might have been around it when you were coming up, but to really indulge once you have the money and you're around people is who are dangerous.
Is that the timing of that? Really?
If I'm remembering, because that's how he had a friendship with Jada Pinkett. They were like in a ballet dance school. They were like in an art school in high school in Baltimore together.
This is going to be a mind-blowing movie.
His mom is like a former Black Panther. Like, he's not out here thugging when he's like 15. That's a later development.
Jada Pinkett wrote, "The reimagining of my relationship with Pac has only been deeply hurtful. Forgive me, my relationship with Pac is too precious for me for the scenes in All Eyes on Me to stand as truth. Pac never read me that poem. I didn't know that poem existed until it was printed in his book. Pac never said goodbye to me before leaving for LA. He had to leave abruptly, and it wasn't to pursue his career. I've never been to any of Pac's shows. By his request, we never had an argument backstage." So she definitely saw the movie and isn't pleased.
Wait, who this is Jada?
Jada Pinkett Smith.
She never went to shows by his request?
Yes. So I guess, you know, the movie.
He probably didn't want her to see him
picture.
Like that, because he was like a nice, gentle boy, from what I understand, when they were really good friends.
Right. This is just a regular civilian. Says, "It's not a documentary, people. It's a movie. It had a script. They make up scenes to keep it entertaining." Why is that answer ever okay? It's a biopic, and the word is bio.
Yeah.
That's what bothered me about Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, and I remember arguing that with you, and I've been thinking about it, and I'm like, A, I didn't watch the movie, so you were totally right about me arguing. B, I wanted to be so much on this side, because the story was, this is, I think, the first Black movie to this, that, and the next. So I'm like, let's just give it a chance. And then I was like, what am I doing?
You're making people look good that were assholes, you know? And you don't have to make up whole stories. Never mind the serious things that Ray brought up, but you don't have to make up that the police rushed the stage because when NWA said fuck the police, it didn't happen. You can add what really happened, that they went to the hotel room that these guys were at.
It's very American to do that. Like, Americans are weirdly very married to like an underdog story,
right?
And one wherein their underdog hero is triumphant and mostly without flaws.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Even comedies, like even The Office, had to be revamped to be more hopeful and optimistic for an American audience.
I do now, especially like when a movie or a show, I can't tell who I'm supposed to like. I'm just like,
I can't think of an example.
There are.
It's reality television where everyone's terrible, which I love.
Right.
No, I think it's more like movies. Okay. And I will probably come up with like the worst movie title like right now, and that has like Drinking Buddies, for example.
MC Hammer.
But that's so stupid, it's not really a heavy
topic.
But
you know, even things like Breaking Bad, where Vince Gilligan is like, we hate Walter White. And it's like, it didn't come across, because we don't know how to tell American stories, I don't think, without there being a hero or the person you're supposed to root for. There's never like an objective bird's eye view of a terrible situation wherein they're all terrible people. It's like, even me, when Walter White's like, and you think that of me, I'm the one who knocks. I'm like, this is triumphant. And it's like, no,
right.
He's telling his emotionally abused wife, who's just found out that he's the biggest kingpin in New Mexico, that he's the killer, that she's worried about getting him. It's terrible.
Well, you found yourself rooting for Tony Soprano. Same thing.
I never watched The Sopranos, right. But yeah, I loved Henry Hill and Goodfellas. Yeah. Like, if you give me a crime story and the protagonist is the criminal, I'm going to root for him.
MC Hammer about the movie. "Everything seen, said, and done ain't meant to be in a movie. All Eyes on Me is an excellent, truthful portrayal of my loved one. I salute it." So he's saying, yeah, maybe there is more. But some of that stuff doesn't mean need to be in a movie.
Yeah, but then I don't think, first of all, I don't
then
think...
Then make up your own characters.
Right, exactly.
Have Dr. Dre fly.
Yes, I don't think that every... First of all, I don't think that every story needs to be biopicked, right?
Right.
Like, not everything does. And then...
Although I do think that you can biopic the shit out of, like, pretty much everyone's life, because everyone had something.
Sure, but it's like, first of all, who doesn't know Tupac's story that it like required a biopic? Like,
well, you're telling me all this stuff that I'm like, holy
really?
Shit, I didn't know.
I didn't know
he was a convicted rapist.
Fair enough.
I didn't know.
I think maybe also I care about that. Like, I know Mystical was a convicted rapist too.
But I didn't know he grew up different than what he depicted later. I didn't know that came
later.
I
think most of Tupac's fandom would have known that, and I'm not sure that there are that many people who would have seen this biopic and been surprised by a lot of the information in there. He's so overexposed. I mean, like, we, like, in the time before Twitter, I knew so much about a 25-year-old. That's crazy.
If you tell me that Tupac did not work for the Postal Service, I will be highly upset.
No, he didn't. And
what the hell?
And Janet did not have those braids all the time.
After you see the movie, says MC Hammer, you understand my response to your question. It's a great movie. It's not a documentary. Salute, fist pound emoji, 100
emoji.
That's
so dumb. It's not a documentary. Okay. Like, it's okay to be like, I don't care about your criticism. I think there's this weird thing where people are often so greedy. I find it especially true in comedy, but generally in arts. Like, you do this thing that other people don't like, and you're like offended that they don't like it. And so then you try to justify or like come up with a reason for why they should be okay with this thing that you did that they don't like. And it's like, you should just not care. Like, you should, if you're somebody who doesn't think that movies need to be documentaries, then it's just like, why do you care to explain that to people who do?
That's interesting. I want to compare it to the Food Network, and I watched the show Chopped. Are you familiar with it? Okay, so it's four chefs that compete, right? And then they get critiqued like crazy. Like, you just kind of are like, wow, chefs really get put through, because they'll name something like, this is this kind of dish, however it is. Yeah. And they're like, you chopped it like this, which means you can't name it that. And they're so fucking fully offended. Now the chefs have one of two ways to respond. And I noticed they only respond one of two ways. One is, well, I thought that, you know, because of this, it was kind of like, you know, Fragua-esque or whatever. It was like a play on it. And they're like, you should have said that then. You're not going to win. Then there are the other chefs that are like, thank you, chef. I agree with you. And they get so much further, not necessarily to the next round, but they get further in terms of, why are you arguing?
Mm-hmm.
You agree these are the judges.
Mm-hmm.
They said this tastes salty.
Right.
You're going to go, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Right.
Who
also,
gives a shit?
Also, a different point. Chefs are egotistical assholes. And just say, yes, chef. That's all they need. That's all they ever needed.
Well, that's kind of, that's the weirdness about the competition. Now, if you agree to do the competition, then maybe you can challenge the rules. But yeah, if you announce a dish as something, it's got to be that. And
you know that by watching that.
And unfortunately, in cooking, there are techniques that make a dish one thing and right. techniques that make it another thing. And if you mix them, then that's not it. And like, you know, like a mayonnaise is a mayonnaise and it's not an aioli. And like, it matters to the people it matters to, you know?
Right. So if a documentary is a documentary, right? And you decided to call that a documentary and everyone's like, a documentary is more like this, or whatever movie, a biopic is more like this. And people go, that's not what it is. You can go, well, that's my movie. Mm-hmm. Or you can go, oh, you're right, I'll go back and edit it. Like, yeah. Oh, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just be like, okay, well, we made the movie we wanted to make. I don't know what telling you the definition of a biopic is going to do.
What you're saying is, don't splash ketchup on my face and tell me my head is bleeding. I follow.
Thank you, Judge Judy.
Now, Ray, I'm telling you, you like Ray. You want to see the president's show. Anything that you're laughing at, she wrote, most likely.
Is it time to re-up? Do you know if they're re-upping?
Well, so we've got extended through August, so we have...
Well, fingers crossed no one's impeached, right?
Well,
yeah, I actually have been having like a really big conflict about that, because it's like, I was saying on stage the other day, it's like, on the one hand, like, he's terrible for brown and black people. On the other hand, he's making me a shit ton of money, like, I get Ben Carson, you know, like,
right.
I get Omarosa. Like,
here's what you do. You keep voting for him. Right? You hope he gets reelected. And every so often you take brown and black people out for dinner. A little rosé, you know what I mean? Card's good now.
It's not that much money, you guys. It's just a shit ton of money compared to what I used to make. I just want to be clear. I don't want to get robbed. I ain't got nothing.
Of course, we have the Keith and the Girl YouTube channel where you can see the very beginning of Misandry with Marsha. Ray Sani is on the very first episode. Flavor of the Month, of course, has 4 episodes. But also download their podcast right now, Misandry with Marsha and Ray.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
And there you have it. Okay? All right. KeithandTheGirl.com.